Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus with Bob Mendelson.
Let's read chapter 9 in the midst of this punishment section about the conquest and the loss of glory. Yipes. How grievous is this chapter? How much of this do you read and you think, maybe I can get my black highlighter and cover it over. Maybe I can get my scissors and cut this out. I want a Bible that doesn't have any of this. We had a fellow come in the bookstore last week who was looking for an old Christian book from the 70s called The Pocket Promise Book. I remember it, and we have something similar. But his promises that he wanted did not include these. He was looking for a promise book that said, you'll be blessed when you come in and when you go out. You'll have all of bounty. You'll have blessing. You'll have prosperity. You'll have joy. He didn't want these. They will bear no fruit. They will be cast out. They will be put to shame. The birds of the air will pluck it. They don't want that. Nobody wants that. But it's a warning about the loss of godly glory that is sure to happen. On whom will it happen? On Israel. Why on Israel? Because we've forgotten God. That's what it said at the end of chapter 8. Look what it says at the end of chapter 9. Because they've not listened to him. They'll be wanderers.
But aren't the Jews now wanderers among the nations?
Sure. And yet there are nearly 6 million of us back in the land. So there's a wandering and a homecoming at the same time. It's a different story. This was when we were all there, and then we were getting ready to be collected by the Assyrians. This was just before the captivity. When I look at this, I think, woe is me. Because what am I doing to bring honor to God? What am I doing that is so different than what they were doing? And if I'm not doing things differently than they, then my lot is the same as their lot. My outcome is the same as their outcome. Unless I do what he warns us to do. The sin earlier was idolatry. Now the sin is not listening. That's all it is, not listening. So let's back up to verse 1 and see it in context. You know there's hope coming. You know the outline is true. There's a restoration coming. There is a future hope. So don't get depressed. But what he says here is that Israel, verse 1, is not supposed to rejoice like the other nations. Because we've played the harlot forsaking God and gone after prostitution. So again, it's the idea that Gomer represented at the beginning, the harlot wife of Hosea the prophet. So again, he hearkens to it and says, Israel, you've been doing that for a long time. So don't get excited. Don't be rejoicing. I get a picture of the revelry of New Year's Eve. Don't rejoice like the nations. Don't be celebrating with drunkenness and prostitution and with fire and all that. Don't, he says, verse 1, don't be happy. Don't rejoice. Don't celebrate like the goyim. The Hebrew word is the amin. Don't be celebrating like all the rest of them around you, all the Assyrians and the Lebanese and the people all around, the Ammonites and the Moabites, because you're supposed to be different than them. And then what does he say? You've loved harlots' earnings on every threshing floor. That's where prostitutes of the temples used to work, these big old open areas. And they'd set up shop, if you will, not in King's Cross, but in the threshing floors of the Jewish people. And it's the breaking of breaking the two commandments. Number one, the first commandment, which is don't have any other gods before me. And then the adulterous one. Number 7, don't play the harlot, don't have adultery, don't have sexual improprieties. So those are two of the big 10 sins that Israel was doing. He says, if you're doing those things, what are you doing out there with streamers and flags and waving and fireworks, having a good old time? You should feel bad. Guilt should be on you, but now it's not, so I'm going to punish you. You've rejected guilt, so I'm going to punish you. The good thing about this, friends, is that when you feel guilty, there is hope. Be worried when you are callous to guilt. When I've done it so many times, times, I've not done it so many, whatever it is that you've sinned, either in committing something or omitting something. If you still feel bad, good. The day you don't feel bad is the day, the next day, your punishment comes. Threshing floor, verse 2, and winepress will not feed them, even though that's what threshing floors do. That's where you cull out the chaff and where you get the grain ready for eating. He says, all your food is not going to supply you. New wine will fail them. The things that you think you're going to have, your big old wallet, it's going to be empty. You think it's providing. You think you've got a job. You think you've got supply. It's going to not even bring you lunch.
Was the threshing floor a place where the prostitutes used to meet?
Well, that's where they carried out their fertility rites, on the threshing floor. Certainly a threshing floor was an agricultural location. That's where you thresh the grain. But it was there in light of his comments with Gomer and the constant chiding of adultery. That's where the cult prostitute rites would take place. And as a result, they'd worship the goddess and the gods to provide fertility to their children and fertility to the land. And this is Israel, for goodness sakes. Jews, we're not supposed to act like that. We're not supposed to believe in the god of the lottery or the god of the pokies. I hear guys on the golf course, you know, they hit a ball and it's out of sight. And they say this phrase, it's in the lap of the gods. Lap of the gods? What the heck? I said, I don't know what that means. Oh, it's in the lap of the golf gods. So whatever the golf gods want to do with it, if I can find it, I find it. If not, I'll have to hit another ball. Really? You believe that? Of course, it's just a phrase. But these guys back in the 8th century BC were believing that. And they believed in the god of the fertility rites and the god of Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, from which we get the word cereal, the grain god, and all these other gods by which then they would have provision. He said, you can believe that all day long. Your lunch is going to be gone. Didn't he say something like that last week? Chapter 8, verse 7. The standing grain has no heads. It yields no grain. Should it yield, strangers will swallow it up. In other words, even if something does slip through the cracks of God's justice will still get it. Verse 3. They will not remain in the Lord's land. Captivity is coming. This is the first time the Jewish people are going to be exiled from our territory after having come in under Joshua some 700 years earlier. 700 years. Now, we've been in Australia as a nation, how long? 1780s. So a little over 200, 220, 240 years, right? Multiply that times almost three times. And that's how long the Jewish people were in the land of Israel. That is called entrenched. We've been there a long time. That's 2013 now. Back up 700 years and you're at 1313. How many nations in Europe were there then as they are today? Almost none. Britain was Britain, but it wasn't a nation like we know a nation. So there were tribal states, city-states in Italy and in Spain. When did Spain become Spain? Was in the 15th century. When did France become France? In the 18th century, in the way we know it today. So those are new guys on the block. And we're looking in the Bible here at a country that had been a country for 700 years. Jewish people living in the land 700 years. And God says, you're going to be gone very soon. What do you think they thought in light of their history and God's pronouncement? What do you reckon their first thought was?
That it can't happen.
Yeah, unbelief. Who are you kidding, Hosea? You're just some guy. What are you, nuts? God's not going to kick us out. We've been bad. We've had some bad times. Yeah, you know, we had the judges, and we had some other times, and other prophets have come along. But come on. I mean, under King David, look how Solomon, he extended the land so far just a couple hundred years ago. We are indomitable. We are unmovable. God's not going to kick us out. And years, literally just a few years on, they are out of there. So yeah, I think you're right. Unbelief, disbelief, how could that ever happen? How about this? Could all the Jews of America be kicked out in 5 years? Today, physically we're entrenched, geographically we're entrenched, historically we're entrenched.
Another Hitler that comes.
A Hitler or a Torquemada. In 1480s, the Jewish people of Spain, we were so entrenched throughout Spain, it was impossible. Somebody says, there won't be a Jew here in 5 years. But in 1492... exile, gone, every Jew. 3 years later from Portugal, the entire Iberian Peninsula, cleansed of Jews in a heartbeat. Wait a minute, could that happen today? You betcha it could happen today. And it's untenable. It's unbelievable. It's disbelievable. But friends, it could happen. And it can happen on the basis of God's judgment and then the people of the world joining in with that. That is, an Ahmadinejad or a Hitler or a Pharaoh or any number of... Somehow, Jews could be an Ahasuerus listening to a Haman, and all of a sudden, every Jew is kicked out of America or Australia. It doesn't seem feasible, but it could happen. So, after 700 years, verse 3 says, they will not remain in the Lord's land. Just like that. And sure enough, it's true. It was first called Egypt back in chapter 8, but we know that it's Assyria. Ephraim will return to Egypt, it says, and in Assyria they'll eat unclean food. It doesn't mean we're going to go to two different locations. It's just using the term Egypt to mean a place of captivity. Look, we as Jews know what that means. Egypt. Yes. You say Egypt, you're talking the Exodus story. You're talking Passover. That's a long haul and a big chunk of our time. But, you know, unless you're an Egyptian Jew, and there are some, unless you're an Egyptian Jew, you're going to think of Egypt as a place of slavery, hostility, and from which we need to be delivered. So it's right that Hosea uses that term to describe the capture, the slavery, the exile into which we're going to be going. And he says in verse 3, we're going to eat unkosher food, tameh, impure food. Why would we do that? Why would we eat tameh?
Because we've lost our foundation. We've lost our tradition.
Yeah, we're exiled, and so we're not going to go back to the thing immediately that just kicked us out. We're going to be saying, how dare they? You see this in books and movies where somebody is kicked out of school or kicked out of a job or something. We use the term going postal. It's an American phrase, and it comes from the idea of a post office worker who gets so angry that he turns around with a gun and kills the people who fire him. So that's what the word going postal means. It means enraged against the very people who exiled you. And I think naturally, sociologically, psychologically, what happens is Israel is going to be kicked out by God and be going postal against God in light of the reality. So if we go to Egypt, I'm going to go eat some unclean food. I'll show you. It happens when you lose a job. It happens when you lose a husband or a wife. It happens when you lose in the sense of are removed by your neighborhood throws you out or your boss or your sister or whatever. Then I'll show you, sister. And we go postal. Sometimes not so good. I think that that's one of the reasons we're going to eat unclean food at the end of verse 3. The other is that there isn't any kosher food around when we are in exile. We don't have the rabbi, we don't have the certificate of kashrut, whatever it is under the legislation which we had in those days, it's impossible. One of those two. Verse 4, they won't pour out drink offerings of wine to the Lord, their sacrifices won't please him. So again, whether it's a sacrifice because we don't have a temple or we don't offer things right, it's all because we're inventing our own religion. That's the key that you find at the end of the chapter, because we didn't listen to the Lord, meaning we're going to make up our own conversation, our own rules, our own laws. So we're going to eat unclean food. Our bread's going to be like mourner's bread. We'll become defiled, which means even the very thing you thought was going to cleanse you is going to ruin you. It won't enter the house of the Lord. What are you going to do on your moed, on your appointed festival? The moedim are the appointments that God commands. Passover, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Those are the moedim from Leviticus 23. And then he says, the second half, and on the day of the Chag of the Lord. The feast of the Lord generally is understood to be Sukkot. And the feast, or the last day of the feast, is Shmini Atzeret, the eighth day of the gathering. So what are you going to do from A to Z? That's what he's saying. From the commandments, from the beginning of the Bible to the latest. What are you going to do from all the appointments God established to the things you even come up with, like a Yom Yerushalayim? What are you going to do? You're not going to comply. You're not going to follow through. You're going to make up your own religion. Now, all day long you can make up your own religion, but that's going to bring the punishment of being conquered and taken into captivity. We're going to see that again in chapter 10. Verse 6, behold, they'll go because of destruction. Egypt will gather them up. Memphis, which was a big city in Egypt, it's not in Tennessee, it was like a necropolis a big old burial city. So Memphis will bury them. In other words, you will be subsumed by the funerals of a funeral city. I was in one not long ago in Jordan, a place called Petra. Petra was a place where the Nabataeans settled in the 6th century of the Common Era. And the carvings, I could show you maybe after Bible class, and for those listening online, go to my Flickr site, FLICKR.com. Go to search Petra. Yeah, just search Petra, and you'll find some awesome photos, and you might even find some of Bob Mendo's photos there. But it's a beautiful, carved-out, 3-mile walk from the beginning of the town down into the place that you would recognize from Indiana Jones' movie about the treasury of Petra, which was just a facade of a building. Never a building was there. So we walked 3 miles. There's the treasury. We're all taking photos. Where's the money? That's what everybody always wanted to know. There was never a building. There's no money there. Never was money there. But it was a fun place to hide things if you wanted to. That's a city that's a necropolis. Necra meaning death. Polis city, a city of death, or a funeral place. It's sort of like a big old cemetery, only it was a city that was a cemetery, and so was Memphis. That's the characterization that Hosea is saying. Even Memphis will bury them. Weeds will take over their treasures of silver. Thorns will be in their tents. So things where you expect plenty and agricultural bounty are going to produce nothing, in fact, worse than nothing. Weeds are worse than nothing, right? Wheat grows, that's good. If you don't have wheat, or barley, or oats, or whatever it is, what do you want? Lying fallow, you want it to be empty. You don't want rocks, and you sure don't want weeds, because weeds, you ever tried to take a weed off of a tree, or off of a plant? Good luck. Because it wraps around, they've got these little suckers that stick it to the tree or the house or whatever it is. We look at it today at Ivy League schools. We say, isn't that beautiful? Ah, Harvard with the red brick and the weeds growing. We don't call it weeds. What do we call it? Ivy. It's beautiful. Oh, it's ivy. And it looks so handsome. Well, try to get that ivy off and you'll find what a weed is. So it is here that this is worse than nothing. Weeds are going to take over. Thorns inside their tents, which means even when you try to sleep, thorns are going to get you on your back. So there's no comfort, there's no peace in any way. Verse 7, the days of punishment have come. Retribution, it says. So it's not only a punishment, it's a retribution for things you've done against other people. So in one case, it's the punishment for what you've done against God. In another case, it's what you've done against other people. Let Israel know this, their prophet, look at the Hebrew word here, is Evil. Evil. It's not Nabal, meaning fool, but it's Evil, like evil, like we use the word. The prophet is evil. Now, it's not the Hebrew word evil, which is Ra, but it's a word that we've made into the word. It's pretty fascinating. The prophet is Evil. The inspired man, there's the man of Ruach, the man of, what's Ruach? Spirit. The man of spirit, or inspired man, is demented. So the person who's supposed to bring us out of all this, the person, remember back here, the guilty parties first were the priests, then the people. It's the leaders who are supposed to take us into good places. So the prophet is a fool. The inspired man is demented because of the grossness of your iniquity and your hostility is so great. Ephraim, that's again a reference to Israel, is supposed to be a watchman, but even a bird catcher takes him out. The snare of a bird catcher is in all his ways. There's only hostility in the house of his God. So where there's supposed to be bounty, where there's supposed to be honor, where there's supposed to be beauty, there is a snare of a bird catcher. There is catching wrong stuff, thorns in our tents. You get the picture. There's nowhere in religion. There's nowhere in politics. There's nowhere in economics. There's nowhere in the situation of growth in the farmland. Everywhere is tainted. Everywhere. They've gone deep in depravity, is the word. We've sunk so deep into sin that we would even consider any prophet like Hosea to be a fool. It's not only that their prophets are fools, but that the people say any prophet is a fool. Okay? So Hosea stands up and says, I know what you're going to call me, but let me tell you the truth. Let's look at Judges chapter 19 and 20. I know that's a distant one. In chapter 19, verse 13, we see the setting. Come, let us approach one of these places. We'll spend the night in Gibeah or Ramah. And in verse 15 of chapter 19, they pass along the way. The sun set near Gibeah, and they turned aside in order to enter and lodge in Gibeah. So that's the setting, and also it's the hill country, verse 18, passing from Bethlehem to Judah to the remote part of the hill country of Ephraim. So we get the word Ephraim and we get the word Gibeah, and that is what Hosea is alluding to back here when he uses those two words. So let's look at Judges 19. It came about in those days. There's no king in Israel. A Levite stays in the remote part of the hill country of Ephraim, takes a concubine for himself from Bethlehem. But his concubine goes out and she's a hooker, plays the harlot against him, and she went away from him to her father's house in Bethlehem, and she was there for a third of a year. Then her husband arose, went after her to speak tenderly, or to her heart, to her, in order to bring her back, taking with him his servant, a pair of donkeys. She brought him to her dad's house, and the girl's father saw him. He was glad to meet him. His father-in-law, the girl's father, detained him. He stayed 3 days, ate, drank, and then they got up early in the morning, prepared to go. The girl's father said, hey, stick around. It's still time for lunch. And then after lunch, you can go. So they sat down, they ate and drank. And then the father said, no, please, verse 6, be willing to spend the night. Stay here again another night. He's detaining him over and over, isn't he? Men arose to leave on verse 7. The father-in-law urged him, so he spent the night there again. Finally, the fifth day, he arose to get up early. And the father said, no, stick around. Sustain yourself. Wait till afternoon. So he stayed. I mean, you want to honor your father-in-law. He's being very faithful. So he gets up, verse 9, to go with his concubine, and he says, behold, now the day's drawn to a close, spend the night. But the man, verse 10, was not willing to spend the night. You know, enough already. I was supposed to leave 4 days ago. So he arose and departed and came to Jebus, that's Jerusalem, and his concubine was with him. And when they were near Jerusalem, the day was almost gone, the servant said, come on, let's turn aside and spend the night here with the Jebusites. But his master said, no, let's go on as far as Gibeah. So that's where we get it. So they went in and they traveled further towards Gibeah. And there, verse 16, an old man was coming out of the field from his work at evening. He was from Ephraim, staying though in Gibeah. He lifted his eyes and says, where are you going? Where do you come from? Verse 18, well, he tells the story. I'm now going to my house, and I have no hospitality. No one will take me into his house. But there's straw and fodder for our donkeys, bread and wine for me, your maidservant and young man. No lack of anything. So the old man said, shalom. Let me take care of all your needs, but don't spend the night in the open square. So he took him into his house, gave the donkeys food, washed their feet, ate and drank. While they're celebrating, the men of the city, certain worthless fellows, sons of Belial, other versions say. Like we use a phrase today, you son of a gun. It's a rascal, it's a worthless fellow. Surrounded the house, pounded the door, and they spoke to the owner of the house, bring out the men who came to your house that we may have sex with them.
This reminds me of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah. It's exactly the same. And it's the Haftorah that's read when Sodom is read in Genesis. So this is what happened in Gibeah. This is the horrible scene that Hosea is referencing. When he uses the word Gibeah, the only thing he's mentioning is this scene of prostitution and homosexuality and illicit. King's Cross times 10. No, don't act so wickedly, verse 23. This man's come to my house. Here's my virgin daughter, verse 24, and his concubine. Let me bring them out to you. Okay, so you get the idea. Read the story later. It's harsh. It's painful to read. Now let's go back to Hosea, and you can see when he says in verse number 9 of chapter 9, they've gone deep in depravity as in the days of Gibeah. He will remember their iniquity and punish their sins. He's talking about the Gibeah of Judges 19. It's evil. It's so bad. Ezra used the term Sodom. That's all we have to say. And we use the term in modern days, sodomy or sodomizing, because it's so bad that throughout history, the word Sodom means something sexually improper. And so we would say to a Jew of the 8th century BC, Gibeah means sexual impropriety, like I'd say King's Cross, which, by the way, is probably going to be a great place to live in 10 years, and probably all cleaned up in 10 years if somebody does their job right. So if you're listening to this after 2023 online, and you're saying, King's Cross, I live there, it's a beautiful place. Well, in 2013, it wasn't. It's a dangerous place in so many ways. Verse 10, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your forefathers as the earliest fruit on the fig tree in its first season, but it didn't work out. Our earliest days as a community of faith, as a nation in the land, 700 years earlier, God chose us and we were early. Early grapes, early figs are a down payment, aren't they, on what's going to come. So we've been there now for generations, and God said, I remember when you first came in, and you were rookies, and you trusted me, and you believed me, and you were precious to me, just like a new grape or a new fig is in its first season. Ah, down payment. This is going to come to bear much fruit. But they came to Baal Peor, and devoted themselves to shame, and they became as detestable as that which they loved. Numbers chapter 25. Page 121, Numbers chapter 25. We see this story where the word Baal Peor gets known to the Jewish people. And now it's been part of our liturgy since the time of Moses, so 700-800 years. While Israel remained at Shittim, the people began to play the harlot. There it is again. Is Zanah with the daughters of Moab. So these are the men of Israel on their way into the promised land. We hadn't even made it yet. Having sexual encounters with the Gentile women of Moab. They invited the people to their sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to the gods. Idolatry, adultery, they happened together. So Israel joined themselves to Baal of Peor. And the Lord was angry against Israel. And he said to Moses, take all the leaders, execute them in broad daylight, so that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. So Moses commanded it, and it was done. There's even a Midianite woman that's brought out. And those who died by the plague, verse 9, were 24,000 people. 24,000 Jews died because of adultery and idolatry. That day, in Baal Peor. If you mention a certain place, if you're in Ukraine, or if you mention to a Ukrainian Babi Yar, they will, to a man, know what happened about the thousands, tens of thousands of Jews who were buried alive in Babi Yar in World War II. Big old ditch made to walk in, shot, buried, terrible, terrible. Babi Yar is a place of hostility. If we say to an American, a black woman, you mention Selma, Alabama, it will trigger something about the civil rights movement and people who stood up for their rights. A word, a city, can mean just that. Baal Peor meant that to the Jewish people. From this passage in Bamidbar, and so it is, not to this day, but to the days of Hosea. So now we're back to Hosea. They came, verse 10, to Baal Peor and devoted themselves to Boshet, to shame, and became as detestable as that which they loved. You become like what you worship. So if you worship a false god, you become like a false god. You become detestable to the God who made heaven and earth. Does that make sense? It's horrible. As for Ephraim, their glory will fly away like a bird. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception, no hope for reproduction. Israel, you're going to fade into oblivion. This is the loss of glory that I comment on here. The loss of glory. I don't want to be just another religion. I want to be a member of the people with whom God has made covenant and in which God demonstrates himself. And where he demonstrates himself is glorious or beautiful. Kavod, a heaviness, a beauty. And as long as I'm in relation to him, I actually think I look better. And when I look in the mirror and see a pretty pathetic looking guy, it might be that I'm looking at a person who's backslidden, not reading his Bible, not praying, not witnessing, not caring about others. The glory will fly away like an oaf, like a bird. In fact, the word fly away, yitofeth, is like a bird is a flyaway. Anyway, it's an amplification of it. Their glory will fly away like a flyaway. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception, no hope. That's what he's saying. And though they bring up their children, so again, just the reflection, just like he did in chapter 8, if things grow, even the things will get burned up. You bring home a McDonald's hamburger, you open it up, you'll find a worm in it. That's what he's saying. In the same way, I'm not going to let you have kids. Even if you do have kids, you're going to be bereaved of them. That's right. You're going to mourn for them until not a man is left. In other words, death will override all the life you think you have. Your wallet's going to be empty. Your pleasure is going to be turning to pain. This, dear friends, is punishment. There's not a hope of a moment. It's been really hot lately. We had the hottest day ever in Sydney last Friday, wasn't it?
Yes.
45.8 degrees. For you Americans, that's 114.44 Fahrenheit. It is drastically hot. It was unbearably hot. What did you do?
I went to the movies.
Okay, go inside to a cinema. You know, I was here in the shop, and the air conditioner had just gone out 3 days earlier. I want to tell you, it was barely bearable in here. We had the fan. It was mobile. I don't know why it's not moving now, but maybe it tired, but it was so stifling. I went down the street just to get a snack or a sandwich, I forget what it was, and I had to literally go into Westfield and out. I had to go in and out of it because I couldn't make it all the way down to the Corso. It was so stifling hot. I was in the shadow. If there were no shade, if there were no air conditioning, what would I do? So what are people doing out in Dubbo, and what are people doing in Tamworth? What are people doing in Yass? They're suffering under this. If there's no shade, there's no billabong, what are they doing? And that's the description, I would say, of the Jewish people in that day. We were in the sun, without a hat, without a slip, slop, slap. We were hopeless. And no hope, but not just no hope for that moment, but no hope of a cloud coming in to shade us tomorrow. This is desperate. This is painful. This is something that would give you despondency. All their evil is at Gilgal. Indeed, I came to hate them there because of the wickedness of their deeds. I'll drive them out of my house. I won't love them anymore. Is that the worst? When we lose relationship with the Almighty. All their princes are rebels. So now the government's a mess. The economy's a mess. The treasury's a mess. Ephraim is stricken. Their root is dried up. So the agriculture's gone. Bear no fruit. Even though they bear children, I'll slay the ones that do come out. My God will cast them away because they haven't Shema. Haven't listened. Shema Yisrael. If we don't Shema, if we don't listen, what does God have to do to get our attention? Remember, that's the whole point. He's even going to send us in this punishment way. He's going to make us lose glory, and we're going to be conquered by the Assyrians so that we can be repenting and restored. There's never a moment when He doesn't long for us to come back to Him. There's never a moment when God is so done with us that He's done with us.
It's like the prodigal son, because the prodigal son rebelled, took all his share and went to a far country. But when he came back, the father saw him from a distance and was so overwhelmed by it that he grabbed him and kissed him.
He ran to meet him.
He ran to meet him, yeah.
And he loved him. He never stopped loving him. Even though by drama, God says, I won't love them anymore. What he's really saying is, they're not going to experience the love that I ever have for Israel. They won't experience it. It's sort of like the Gomer Hosea story. He loved her, but she ran off and played the harlot. It's the Baal Peor. It's the Gibeah. It's the run off and play the harlot. But God, as a husband, loves Israel and longs for us to be in relationship. So how do we get back? By listening to Him. I've been talking this week with a Jewish woman here in Sydney. Both physically, she came here yesterday and we talked, and on Facebook, and you know how it is. You guys have other social media you use. We've talked on the phone, we've visited in many ways. And God appears to be drawing her to Himself. He appears to be getting her to the place where she readily admits her sin. Secondly, where she readily admits her need for salvation from that sin. And three, where she's actually looking for a Savior, that is a person who could bring the salvation. Jesus is a little over the top for her because she's an Orthodox Jew. However, just before this Bible class, she was watching one of the video teachings of mine. And after this Bible class, we'll have our conversation continue. And who knows, by then, she might have received Yeshua. And that is what I've told her she needs to do. Receiving Him as Messiah. To receive Him as Messiah. To accept Jesus, to repent, and receive Him as boss, as Lord. That's what it is to become a believer for you or for anybody. What it is to say yes and then turn and follow Him. Yes, He's Lord. Yes, He's the God who does miracles. Yes, He's my Savior. Yes, He died for my sins and rose from the dead. And if you say that here, or if you say that on listening online, then you can be born again.
You've been listening to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus in Australia. For more information, contact Jews for Jesus, Post Office Box 925, Sydney, Australia 2001. God bless you.